Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to NBR, or as we like to call it around here, Nothing But Rants, the show where I find topics that I'm oddly passionate about, and I pontificate upon them. These are not hot takes, but rather takes that I'm hot about.
Let's shut up and grab some tape.
Parent-teacher conference, maybe?
Yeah, I guess. Anything formal like that, I would say
I would still say eulogy is probably a less socially acceptable time to fart. Are we live, by the way?
Yeah, we are live. Damn. So believe it or that, eulogy's not acceptable there, all right? Ladies and gentlemen, I need you to buckle up. I need you to kick back, relax, most importantly, though. But get ready, because this week, it's a really special edition of the Film Guy Network. You don't get one, you don't get two, but you get three episodes this week of just me and Kirby. No Brooks, on the trail again, doing his football pilgrimage, visiting multiple football programs across the United States. A nationwide traveler he is right now, Christian. So it's just me and Christian this week. So like I said, I need you locked in. I need you here every single week. And more importantly, I need you liking and subscribing to this video. If you haven't already, just go ahead and do it. You know the content's going to be premium. We're going to be bringing it to you. And we have a loaded show like we always do. We're going to be telling you why your favorite football team is not going to win a national title this year.
Oh.
Always a juicy segment to go ahead and tell you why this season might be a little bit of doom and despair for you. College football spending isn't going to be slowing down, according to one college football network, or sports network, I should say. There's a Jeremiah Smith story going around, Christian, that I just think is pretty hilarious. It's nothing to do with Jeremiah Smith, but I think that the narrative is being driven around this comment that he made. I think it's funny, especially with where we're at in college football. So we're going to talk about that. We had football this weekend, Christian. Did you know that?
We did.
We had college football. Now, you couldn't watch it because spring games, it'd be like that now. But Clemson played football this past weekend. We got notes on that.
Actually emailed me about that.
Aaron Murray, just go ahead and tell an Indiana fans, hey, that was it. National titles are over. Don't even expect him anymore. He had a pretty interesting reason why. Maybe not your typical chalk answer as to why a program like Indiana won't be winning a national title, but he gave the take. And Steve Sarkisian, he's feeling a little different, Christian.
Oh,
the Texas Longhorns are feeling a little different
this
year.
Things are different in Austin, baby.
Didn't say they're officially back, but hey, Austin's feeling a little bit different this season than it has in prior years. So like I said, we got a loaded show. And you know what? I don't think we should bury the lead. I think we should just go ahead and get to the meat of this episode right now. You think we should do that?
Let's do it.
All right. You know, usually we could say we start with the news. There are news. We'll get to that, though.
Before you do that, though, I do want to kind of the Steve Sarkisian thing you just touched on. This will be real brief. Who should feel more guilty about the Texas is back things? Sam Ellinger or Joe Tessitore? Because Joe Tessitore obviously started off with the call when they beat Notre Dame, but Sam Ellinger really hammered it home after the Sugar Bowl.
I think the Sam Ellinger one is way more memeable. It's like way more of like when you think of Texas is back, I think that's what everybody envisions in their mind is, you know, Texas beats Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, and it's like, oh, we're back, baby, we're back. And it took quite a time. Sam Ellinger was not the reason why Texas eventually made a return to relevancy.
Nor was the quarterback after him.
Yeah. Hey, Steve Sarkisian didn't say it, but they might be back. They might be back, Christian. But we'll get to that a little bit later.
We'll get to that later.
In fact, we'll go ahead and start this segment off with the Texas Longhorns. Now that we have you guys wrapped it in with your attention right now, why blank won't win the national title? We're going to discuss the top teams in college football. We're not going to go down by conference or anything like that. We're going to give you the teams that we feel like have national title potential aspirations this season and kind of poke holes in the roster, poke holes in this upcoming season, and elaborate why we think that might be the reason why you ultimately don't win a national title this year. So the Texas Longhorns, Christian, why don't they win a national title this year?
So obviously there's a lot of reasons why a team won't win a national title. There's only one team that wins at the end of the year. Texas, on paper, seems like the most advantageous to do so. I think it's why they're ranked number one in a lot of preseason rankings, because of what Arch Manning is, because of all the talent that they've got. Has anyone ever thought about, and there's plenty of examples of this, of when you assemble these quote-unquote super teams, which is kind of what Texas is right now, how they got Cam Coleman, the talent just doesn't mesh well together. Like, there's a lot of just, you know, one piece is without a whole of, oh, they've got a bunch of great players, but they don't mesh well together. That could be a thing for Texas this year. I think that might be one of the reasons why they don't win one. And honestly, the other one is just the roster didn't develop. If Arch Manning doesn't take that step forward, if the offensive line as a whole doesn't take a step forward, if the defense doesn't get better where it was. I mean, they got a defensive coordinator fired this year. Now, again, we feel like that could happen, but if it does not take that next step forward, Texas does not win a national title this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly interesting to talk about with all these transfer portal teams and how some of them have been a bit more mercenary compared to other programs of, like, meshing those players together. And I think that you can kind of see teams later in the years, or like later in the season, start to really pick up, like get some momentum going. I think Miami was kind of an example of this team. Now, I wouldn't say that Miami is, like, necessarily one of these mercenary teams or mercenary rosters, but Texas Tech was an example of this. I don't think that they ultimately lost in the college football playoff because they didn't gel well together. Their players didn't work well together. I think ultimately it was they were just a tad bit inferior to Oregon in that season. But for Texas, I like the thing that I really continue to harp on for them, and I know that everybody wants to talk about Arch Manning. I think that majority of people would tell you that they think that he's going to take that step forward, that he's going to be better this season than he was last year. But ultimately, what a lot of that hinges on for Arch this season is offensive line play and really just like offensive pieces actually panning out, kind of what you're talking about, where players have to get better, and Arch Manning certainly falls under that category. But if the offensive line continues to have the issues that they did last season and you can't run the ball, like I don't care how good Hollywood Smothers is, like if your offensive line isn't doing their job, if they aren't executing on a regular basis, then it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how talented of a running back room you have. You're not going to be able to run the ball, and therefore Texas isn't going to be able to get into their play action sets. It's not going to be as effective like we saw last year, and it puts a lot of stress on Arch. And we saw that last year. He got very frantic in the pocket. We saw the mechanics kind of go all over the place, and it kind of led to him having these emphasized struggles, I would say, in his first year as a starting quarterback. So I really kind of want to focus on the offensive line for them. I would say that if they don't win a national title this year, it's probably going to be because the offensive line didn't live up to the standard that they're hoping for this year. And they got some young players on defense that maybe haven't proven themselves as well. You could go in that direction as well. But they're super talented. That's what everybody talks about. That's why they are viewed as national title favorites this year.
Yeah, I think that there's no denying the talent. I think it's at the point of, can the talent mesh well together, and can the pieces that you need to take a step forward take that step forward, which is kind of a general question for all of them, but it's especially pertinent to Texas in that offensive line.
For sure. So Texas, I mean, it's kind of hard maybe to pinpoint because on paper it does almost look like the perfect roster. It looks like what national title winners look like at this point in the year when you're just looking down the depth chart and you're looking at recruiting rankings and you're looking at previous production. I mean, these guys look like they have all the pieces that are necessary, the playmakers, the defensive playmakers. I mean, Colin Simmons is still on the roster. We know how good he is. He's certainly going to be an impact player for them, but there's just other areas where, yeah, there's talent, but based on what we saw last year, it just may not work out like you thought it would. Now, let's go to a team that they have a ton of losses. They're replacing a lot of production.
Oh, man.
The Ohio State Buckeyes, their season certainly didn't end the way that they had hoped it would, but you bring back Julian Sain, you bring back Jeremiah Smith, you have a lot of talented players. They recruit at a high level like they always do, so the talent isn't lacking. But anytime you have a team that replaces this much production, there's always going to be some questions about them going into this next season.
Have we entertained the possibility that Ohio State doesn't make the college football playoff this year?
Doesn't make it?
And I'm not saying that's going to happen, but there is a world where you lose to Texas and Austin, you lose one game to either at Indiana, at USC, or at Oregon, and then you can stumble along the way against Michigan or at one of those teams. Like, now, some would argue that with that schedule, 9-3 should be plenty good to make it into the college football playoff, and I wouldn't be against that depending on what they do on the field, but there's a world where Ohio State doesn't even get to the dance because the schedule is just too tough this year and they have lost too much. Like, that's kind of the main reason why I thought, because other than that, like, a lot of these teams, Georgia, Ohio State, I suppose even Indiana at this point, like, the expectation should at the very least be getting to the dance, and then at that point, who knows what will happen. I'm in a world where there's a world where Ohio State doesn't make the playoff this year. Now, it's slim and it would take a lot to go wrong, but this is the hardest schedule in college football, in my opinion. I know that there's going to be metric rankings and all those things, but
yeah, on paper, it's a tough schedule. It's a brutal one, but Ohio State is also, to their credit, like at least over the past few years, Ohio State has not been one of these teams that shies away from a tough schedule. I know that Big Ten teams are often the brunt end of the joke of, oh, it's a soft schedule, oh, you play in the Big Ten, but Ohio State has been scheduling the big boys. They toughen up the schedule, and they don't shy away from it. This season certainly is going to be any different because they're going to be playing Texas again this year. I do look at the defensive side of the ball for them. Now, They've been good. They've been good on the defensive side of the ball for a long time now, and that's what is expected of a team that recruits the way that Ohio State does. But when you lose players like Arvell Reese, when you lose the Style Brothers, when you lose Caleb Downs, mm-hmm. those are things that I just can't ignore. And of course not. Like, they bring in James Smith and Quay Rousseau from Alabama. Those are great additions. I think that their secondary is going to be good. Like, I'm a big Devin Sanchez fan. I think Jalen McClain is really good. But when you lose impact players and players that are as good as those guys, it's just hard to ignore, like, having to replace them. And I think it just might be one of those things where you're talking about with the schedule, like, getting those guys acclimated to being everyday starters and being in different roles and them having to be the highly impactful players. Sometimes that takes a little bit of time to get them accustomed to that. So maybe you have one of those situations where you have one of these tough games roll up and, you know, you take a loss. You take one of those bumps in the road, if you will. I'd also kind of pivot over to the offense as well. I just don't know where continued growth is for Julian Sain. Mm-hmm. I think he's a good quarterback. I mean, most accurate in college football. We know the numbers. We know what he did last year. Super efficient at the position. But I do think that there is a need at the quarterback position to where guys have to take that next step. And especially for this offense this year, you would really love to see that. With you get one more year of Jeremiah Smith and you want to maximize that as much as possible. You get Chris Henry Jr. in for his freshman year. I just don't know where that next step is for him. And if he's the same quarterback that he was last year, I'm not going to say that that's going to be the reason they don't win a national title. But I do have some questions about, like, I just don't know where he gets better. I don't know where the next step is for Julian Sain this offseason to where it goes, whoa, this guy is one of the best quarterbacks in college football without a doubt.
I could see that, yeah. So schedule too tough and quarterback didn't develop as much as you needed him to with the losses that you're having on defense. So two legit reasons.
All right, we'll stick in the Big Ten. We got Oregon, and I'm going to be honest. I left Oregon blank. I didn't leave Oregon blank, though, because I think that they're a flawless roster, that I think I just look at them and I look at their season this next year, and when I envision it, I just see it being an easy sailing path to a national title and Dan Lanning's first national championship. That's not why. For whatever reason, whatever my skepticism is of Oregon, I feel like anything I think of is like just kind of a chalk answer. It's like, oh, Dante Moore, are we going to see improvement from him? Oh, is the defense going to get better? Are the weapons going to deliver like they did, like they have in previous years? Like, is Evan Stewart going to be the guy that he was prior to his injury? DeCorian Moore in year two, what does that look like? Losing Kenyon Sadiq, like, all those answers just feel like super basic and bland. Like, it's not really a reason why, but there's just something with Oregon about, like, I don't know that they win a national title this year, but I could also see it. Like, they have a really good team.
Oh, I mean, all these teams on this list, I think you could see. The reason why I'm saying that if they don't win a national title, this will be wise, because the offense took a step back with Will Stein leaving.
Oh, that's a big
reason. And they hired from within, and in respect to Dan Lanning, it's one of the more out there kind of decisions he's made in the hiring process of coordinators. He's had a lot of overturn at that offensive coordinator position. I'm not worried about them losing and having to replace it. I'm worried about the fact that previous time with Tosh Lupoy and with Will Stein, it's been guys on the outside that he's brought in and then updated the system. This is just a guy that's going to try to run Will Stein's system in there. And if we know that if you're not the guy who created the system, it's almost never run as efficiently. Dante Moore should be a better quarterback, but I don't know if Oregon's going to have the offensive firepower to keep up. We saw this last year. They struggled mightily against Indiana in both games. Like, there were instances where Oregon's offense didn't look great. They didn't look great against Iowa last year. Now, yeah, maybe Dante Moore getting better can hide some of those things, but I think the offense might take a step back.
And, like, for Oregon, too, I'd say the questions that I have going into this season are the questions that have remained with Oregon over the past few years and around Dan Lanning. Like, the biggest thing everybody will talk about with Dan Lanning is, oh, it's the playoff games. It's the big matchups. Like, he just can't win those. And it's not even that he can't win those or win those games. It's that they haven't looked good in those matchups, you know? It's been some brutal playoff losses for Dan Lanning over the past couple of years. But I'd also say, like, these programs and these coaches that the same theme continues to roll over into the next season – guys that we think are good enough, or like we think are really good coaches, like we think Dan Lanning is a top 10 coach in college football, eventually it seems like those answers get figured out. Like, Kirby Smart went through this process of, like, can he get over the hump? Can he beat Alabama? Can he finally do it? And he ultimately does. Jim Harbaugh went through this phase with Michigan, and he ultimately wins a national title. Ryan Day went through this phase with Ohio State. He ultimately wins a national mm-hmm. title. I feel like Dan Lanning is in that phase currently of, like, the repeated questions are just the same things every single year, and everybody's just waiting for him to break through that wall and finally do it. And this very well could be that season. But again, it's like, the same questions that I had last year, I kind of have the same ones going into this year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that until Dan Lanning can prove to you that he is one of these guys, that's going to be the overhang over his head, obviously. And that does feel like a chalk answer of until Dan Lanning shows us he can win, we're not right. buying it. I think the offense seriously takes a step back.
Yeah, and you gave a much better answer, and that's why I left it blank, because I didn't want to come here and give the basic answer that everybody's asking. So I just – maybe I copped out a little bit. You can label it however you want, but, again, I think Oregon's really good. They certainly won a national title, so it's nothing against them, but it's just the same questions that I've had about Oregon over the past couple of years. Notre Dame next up on the list. Now, for me – it all boils down to replacing offensive production. Now, you get C.J. Carr back. A lot of differing opinions around him. I would say a majority agree that he is going to be one of these guys that's contending for a Heisman, that's going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the country. You really saw him figure some things out later in the season. Didn't look that good against Miami in week one, but as the season progressed, he really started putting everything together. But when I just look at three guys of losing Jajarian Price, losing Jeremiah Love, and losing Malachi Fields, those are three massive offensive producers from last year's roster for Notre Dame. And I have questions about replacing that, because the two running backs alone, I mean, those were two of the best that college football had to offer.
Yep.
Notre Dame fans would tell you that they were the best tandem in college football. And maybe you can't push back against that. But with the way people talk about Jeremiah Love, with the way that people talk about Notre Dame, or Notre Dame fans talk about Jeremiah Love, this generational talent, and Jadarian Price being right behind him, a really talented college back, that's something that a young quarterback, it's a luxury to be able to have that to rely on in your back pocket of like, hey, if I get us in a sticky situation, or if we need to pick up 7 yards right here on 2nd and 10, I'll just hand it off to one of my really good running backs. I don't know what that looks like this year. And I don't know if Malachi Fields, like, what's the replacement there? Where's our X answer? Because that was a huge thing for them in the season. They came up just short of a national title when they lost to Ohio State. Where's the X receiver? Okay, we have Malachi Fields. He's really good. Where is that this year? That's the questions that I have for them.
Yeah. If there's one thing we've learned in this 12-team college football playoff format, that the majority of times in this, it's a crapshoot once you get there. We've seen two lost teams reach the Natty. We saw last year an Ohio State team that had two losses win the national title. Like, more often than not, the team that gets there doesn't necessarily prove. Like, Notre Dame also fits this category of, hey, just get there and, you know, we'll see what shakes. My worry for Notre Dame, and it's kind of similar for Ohio State, for the opposite reason. Notre Dame's schedule might be too easy for them to be a college football playoff team. Because we saw it last year. You lost your two most important games and you got boxed out by Miami. You only have one important game this year. You've got Miami and that's it. You got to hope, hey, maybe Wisconsin turns out to be a good team. Maybe Navy's a top 25 team when we play them. They have no preseason top 25 teams on their schedule with the exception of Miami. So if you lose that game and you're 11-1 looking around, now I understand that the memorandum of understanding that they have would place them in the top 12, but are you a top 12 team if you lose this? Like,
yeah.
Slip up like Marcus Freeman has against Marshall and against teams in the past. Like, let North Carolina upset you or let another bad team beat you. All of a sudden, 10-2, 11-1, that's not a great look. So, I mean, this might be my version of a cop-out answer, but we've seen Notre Dame slip up against inferior teams. If you have that, you don't have the schedule to afford you this anymore.
When do they play Miami?
They play Miami in early November.
Okay. So it's hard because all they have to do is be ranked inside the top 12 at the end of the season. That's it.
Pretty much, yeah.
They got to be ranked inside the top 12, and they're given a seed. Like, it's so late in the year where I feel like their body of work is going to have them probably as a top 5 team at that point in the year. Like, if they do everything right, if they win every single game up to that point, Notre Dame's undefeated, they're just cruising past everybody, they're going to be a top 5 team at that point. Is there a scenario where they just get absolutely obliterated by Miami and they just get like taken out of the top 12 and they just don't have any more groundwork left to where they could earn their way back in?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think, again, and this is all hypothetical looking at metrics, but if they do get crushed by Miami, the strength of schedule metrics in the lead up to that are not going to be favorable for them. It's going to be, oh, they're a paper champion here, and that they've beaten up on a lot of bad teams. When they faced the one real team they had, they got destroyed. Like, that's going to be an argument that the college football committee has to have. So I think you're absolutely, there is a possibility, because I mean, what, they're probably going to start around 7-10, somewhere ranked in their preseason. So We'll see. I think that they could find themselves in a serious situation where even if you beat Miami, but you lose to a Michigan State or you slip up twice, like, this is not a schedule you can afford two losses. So if you beat Miami, if you lose to Miami, you got to be perfect. So that's why I don't think Notre Dame wins a title this year, because we've seen if as long as they get to the playoff, they're more than capable of making it all the way. I think the schedule might keep them out, though, because it is too easy.
It's an interesting route to take, and it may not be the wrong take either. I mean, we've seen it, like, and it all just depends. You know, these committees change, and it seems like the criteria that is held to the highest standard, it differentiates, and we never really know what the committee is truly feeling, because they just slap out the rankings, and then they throw the chairman out there, and he answers some questions by ESPN. And it kind of just goes all over the place. It's never just a consistent line of the criteria that we like, what we believe should be the most important things or what they value the most important things. We never really get a true answer. Hopefully that's something that changes this year. But I mean, we saw it last year where Notre Dame was in the mix all the way up until the final rankings, and then they got booted out. We'll see what happens this year with the schedule. It is something that should be paying, like, it's worth paying attention to this next season for sure. All right, we'll shift over to the SEC, we'll go back to the Big Ten. Indiana, the reigning national champs, obviously replacing a lot of people, obviously like don't have the James Madison core that they once had from the Kirk Cignetti regime over there, replacing the quarterback, all those good things. Why does Indiana not repeat as a national champion this year?
It feels so lazy to say how hard it is to win a national title twice in a row.
Yeah.
That's my answer. Like, with everything that went right for Indiana last year and everything that's departing this year, it's a very hard sell to convince me that that team's going to have as much success as it did last year. And it doesn't even have to have as much success. It has to go 10-2 in the regular season, not lose. Like, the argument for Indiana kind of remains the same as it was heading into last year of, hey, don't lose your big games by a lot and just have a solid record come the end of the year. Then you can make to the dance. I think that the reason Indiana doesn't win a national title is because it's just so damn hard to do it two times in a row, especially with all the overturn they had, especially with the culture that was set from, let's be honest, some players that were older than most. That's not a slight to you, that they played within the rules, allegedly, and, you know, they won the national title. There's absolutely that. But a lot of those players are gone this year, including your Heisman-winning quarterback. Now, Josh Hoover's a very excellent option. He had some really good games at TCU, but again, I don't know how much you can have overturn and survive that. This isn't even 21-22 Georgia, where the transfer portal and NIL had just kind of started. Like, that was still, I consider, like, early college football playoff era teams. Like, that's before rosters had really figured out. This is a completely different animal.
Oh, for sure. For me. And, like, if Indiana is going to be this carbon copy of the Hoosier team that we saw last year, where it's just they out-execute you every single weekend and it leads to a national title. And I do believe that. That seems to be what Kirk Cignetti teams are really hinged on, is they watch film more than anybody else and they prepare for games in a different way than anybody else, and it leads to them out-executing teams. But this year, I would pinpoint that at the quarterback position, because Fernando Mendoza, I know that we've talked a lot about him being the number one prospect or the number one overall pick in this year's NFL draft. Is he worthy of that? Well, by demand, he probably is, but he's not this flawless prospect, and he's not your typical number one overall draft pick. But he was efficient, and he made the right plays, and he was timely with his plays, and he didn't turn the ball over. Josh Hoover is a little different than that. Josh Hoover is a gunslinger. This guy doesn't shy away from tight windows. He'll force the ball at times. You saw that in the turnover numbers that he had during his time at TCU. So if you're a team that continues to really preach on executing and just making the right play every single time, it could get a little shaky at quarterback this year. And I love Josh Hoover. I mean, I think he's supremely talented. We broke down his tape last offseason, and I fell in love with him then, paid attention to him this past year. And I think that what you can attribute to some of the turnovers during his time with the Horned Frogs is the talent just wasn't as good. And I think that the parts around him weren't good enough to where sometimes we did have to force the issue, and it led to us turning the ball over in some poor moments in the game. But for now at Indiana, like, if the talent remains the same, I still don't know if, like, we're just going to completely decimate our turnovers and we're all of a sudden we're going to become this guy that takes care of the ball every single time. I think that the turnover numbers are certainly something to pay attention to, and I could see, like, the step back a little bit from quarterback being an issue for them this year, and enough to where they don't win a national title. Now, sticking with the team that is also replacing a lot, especially offensively, Alabama, there's a lot of moving parts here. Still really good. Made some additions in the portal. Maybe didn't make all the moves that maybe the fans wanted to see them make heading into this next year, considering the pieces that they have to replace. But still some really good offensive weapons. But I would attribute it to the offense being the reason why maybe they don't win a national title this year. I mean, for starters, you're putting in another first-year starting quarterback. You did it with Ty Simpson last year. Now it's either going to be Austin Mack or Keelan Russell. And I don't care who it is. Whether you choose Mack or whether you choose Russell, there's going to be growing pains there. We see it every single year with guys that have first-year starts going into the SEC. It just happens, or any college football team for that matter. We don't even have to boil it down to just in that conference. It happens with anybody. But also on top of that, you're just replacing guys like Jeremy Bernard. You're replacing guys like Jam Miller. And, you know, maybe Daniel Hill does improve this year, or anybody in that running back room, maybe they get better. And I'm not the biggest Caden Proctor fan, but he started for them for multiple seasons for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, the production alone, you got to
production alone, right. Now, Ryan Williams, the Coleman thing that we've changed with his name is really messing me up with him, Cam Coleman and him. So, Ryan Coleman Williams, like, you still have him. Lotsier Brooks is really good. Maybe Sadarian Morgan as a true freshman flashes, but again, like I mentioned at the beginning of this, there's so many moving parts, and it makes me really want to back off. But the good thing is that the defense is really good. I think it's going to be one of the best in the country.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the defense is my concern in this area. And maybe they'll give up, you know, a 30-point game here or there. Offenses are really good in the modern era of college football. There's two reasons, in my opinion, why Alabama won't win the national title this year. Number one is the offense, like we mentioned. There's a lot that I think Ty Simpson did behind the scenes for that offense that doesn't really go recognized. And, you know, through film studies and film breakdowns, I think we saw when he was playing at his best how special Ty Simpson was. But I have yet to see something that makes me feel like, oh, the running game's going to be fixed under Kalen DeBoer, or the quarterback play isn't going to have to be as consistent this year. And the other reason is, and unfortunate as it may be, Kalen DeBoer has yet to put together a full body of work in Alabama. There are times when they look like a top three team, and it's, my God, this team might go all the way. Mm-hmm. And there are also times where it's, wait, they lost to who?
Yeah.
They're trailing who? The score is what in the Alabama game? Like, that has been the story of Kalen DeBoer in Alabama for 2 years. And I said before, until you give me a reason to believe that it's not going to happen, it's kind of like the get over the hump talks we've talked about. Until Alabama can at the very least look consistent throughout. If they're a consistent team and they go 8-4, I would say that's a success for Kalen DeBoer. Now, the record would not indicate that, obviously. But if from week one to week whatever, Alabama looks like the same exact football team, and it's just, hey, they're just not as talented this year, that's fine with me. I would much rather see that than them go 10-2, but man, they lost two horrible games and then they beat three top five teams on the road. Like, that's less impressive to me. So they're not consistent enough under Kalen DeBoer. That's the other reason why they don't win the title.
Yeah, and when I would agree with you that Alabama needs to search and find some consistency with their team under Kalen DeBoer. And when you talk about finding consistency and then also talk about all of the new faces that they're going to be featuring, or not necessarily new faces, but guys that are transitioning into bigger roles or guys that are going to be starting for the first time on offense, that concerns me. I mean, that's obviously going to hinder your ability to find consistency in the season. So if Alabama can't do that this year, then I certainly don't think they're going to be winning a national title. But again, the defense is really good, so maybe that can help alleviate some of the early offensive struggles that they experience. All right, we'll stay in the SEC. Georgia. Why does Georgia not win a national title?
Some people would like to tell you that it's because Gunnar Stockton didn't get better.
And who's saying that?
There's a lot of people. Just go online. And yeah, Gunnar Stockton needs to improve, but Georgia won't win a national title if the defense doesn't get better. And that's why they will not win the title if the defense does not get better. There is no world where a Kirby Smart defense with the people he has on staff and the talent he has in that room should be last in sacks in the SEC. I understand the metrics of how quickly these quarterbacks are getting rid of the football. There's no denying that they were not as good in the pass rush last year. There is no world where a Kirby Smart-led defense with that staff and the talent they have on that roster should be in the bottom third of forced turnovers. There is no world where basically any team that plays them should just be given free points off the first drive because they're walking it down throats. That should never be the MO against Kirby Smart. That has to change. So, yes, we can talk about Georgia's offense and how Mike Bobo and how are they going to praise Zachariah Branch and how Gunnar Stockton has to get better. If that defense doesn't take a step forward and look anything, it doesn't have to look like 2021. It has to look something like it's looked the entire tenure of Kirby Smart, and it didn't look like that consistently enough last year. The Texas game was great. The SEC championship was great. The way they closed out the regular season was great. I watched a Tennessee team that hadn't scored more than 20 points since Josh Heupel got there, put 41 on that defense. I watched Ole Miss have five consecutive touchdowns on the opening game in the first matchup. So that's where Georgia needs to get better, and if they don't do that, they won't win a title.
Yeah, like especially like with what the identity of last year's team was offensively, where it was we're going to take blow after blow, but we're also going to give punches. We're going to throw them constantly for four quarters, and we're just going to beat up on you constantly, and we want to dominate time of possession. Like when that's the and we want to run the ball really well. Like when that's the identity of the offense, what you need with that is also a defense that is going to get the other offense off the field so you can continue that. Like ideally, every game for Georgia goes the way it did against Alabama last year, where your defense is holding strong. Your offense isn't doing a whole lot. Like, they're not scoring 40 points, but they're doing just enough to keep the ball out of Ty Simpson's hands, and they're dominating the time possession, and the other team isn't running the ball. They just can't figure things out. Like, those are the recipes for Georgia winning, at least last year, and I expect them to kind of have a similar offensive identity this year. Now, you hope for more explosive plays, and that's why I'm going to reside in the wide receiver room. It is a little scary, you know, not going to lie. Like, it is a little daunting to think about how much production you are losing there, and I know the talent is there. I know that C.J. Wiley is really good. I know that Kobe White-Helton is really good. I know that Talon Taylor is really good. London Humphreys, he's a veteran. We know what we get out of 16 every single Saturday. All these new coming faces, like, you expect them to be caliber enough in the SEC to replace that production. And Isaiah Kanyon, we saw what he did at Georgia Tech. Like, I think they have the right pieces, but when you talk about wanting to become a more explosive offense, and yes, that relies on Gunnar Stockton being willing to make the throws and doing everything right within the offense and not being so trigger shy this next year, but it also relies on all your offensive weapons being on the same page and doing the right things and making those plays. So I'm just a little skeptical there, as is everybody with Georgia going into this year. When you lose Dylan Bell, Colby Young, Noah Thomas, and Zachariah Branch, how could you not be a little skeptical about the weapons? And I didn't even dive into the tight ends. Like, it's like talent everywhere. And that's what you always say with Georgia, of like, yeah, there's a question here, but, oh, they're so talented. Like, you don't even have to worry about it. Just interested to see how all of that plays out, because if they do become more explosive, that's great. But I think also with your part, it is a two-pronged question. The defense also has to improve.
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving on to a different conference that we haven't even talked about yet, Texas Tech. Seems like it's the only one that matters in this conversation when it comes to winning a national title. Why don't the Red Raiders make the playoff again or win a national title this year?
Yeah, I think that they are steadily working to improve this thing, but I still think they're a few years away from having adequate enough talent to make the run that they would in the college football playoff. Now, they're going to be able to beat up on the Big 12. We saw them do that last year. I mean, the over-under basically is them going undefeated the regular season. They should have no problems getting to the college football playoff. My worry is when you go against these teams that have had years and years of recruiting classes of 4 and 5 stars. Now, they've had incredible transfer portal hauls over the last 2 or 3 years. They're getting some big names. They've got some big-name 5 stars, Felix Ojo, guys like that. They've added to the roster. There's the expectation that they're getting more and more talented. I just don't know if it's there yet to where you can win 4 games in a row against top 10 teams.
Mm-hmm. And I do like their additions. Like, I like Brendan Sorsby. I liked him at Cincinnati. I think it'll fit really well for what they do over at Texas Tech. I think it is a slight upgrade at quarterback compared to what you had last season. But, I mean, the amount of chaos that defense created last year with Jacob Rodriguez and David Bailey, and I'm blanking on the defensive tackle's name right now, but
Tyree Wills.
No, Lee Hunter. Like, those guys, like, there was so much chaos created, and it's so daunting, and it's why they're able to rout opponents like they did in previous years. And replacing all of that, it's not even just about replacing the talent that those players had, but expecting maybe to have that type of chaos recreated and have all those turnovers forced defensively and help out your offense in a lot of situations, I just don't see that being replicated this year. I wouldn't see that being replicated for any college football team. I don't care how well you recruit or how good your transfer portal class is. It felt like a bit of an anomaly. Now, the schedule is what it is for them. I think they'll be fine there. I think they'll get to a playoff again this upcoming season. But I do think that this year you might be taking a step back a little bit because you are going to be young at some spots. And you have guys like LaDainian Guyton and Felix Ojeleye, like you mentioned, where they're going to play probably, but these are young football players that probably need some callousing, that need some reps. And so maybe it's not this year where you like really start to see them breaking through their ceiling as players. It might be a year from now or it might be 2 years from now. So I think there might be a slight step back for Texas Tech. I just don't see them being as good as they were last year, but still have them being a playoff team.
Yeah.
Now, for Miami, whole lot of buzz around them. Mm. I mean, a whole lot of momentum. Whole lot of momentum, it seems like there is for the Miami Hurricanes. Bring in Darian Mensah. You got Malachi Toney. You got the Bakart kid from Duke as well. Mark Fletcher returns. But and I've pounded this every single time we bring up Miami in this upcoming season. Defense for me. And they return a lot of players, okay? I know they didn't lose like every single starter that they had last year. But losing Reuben Bain and losing Messidor and losing all those guys that created so many sacks and made so many negative plays for the opposing team, that's what that team relied on. I mean, that was the bread and butter for last year's team. It wasn't the offense. It wasn't Malachi Toney making all those great plays. Those were just the sprinkles on top. Without the defense that they had last year, you don't even make it to a national title. You may not even make the playoff without those players.
God, no.
So replacing all of that, and I know you got Damon Wilson, and he's really good. I think that you'll be fine in the QB pressure rate still. But losing that many talented players, I don't know if you can expect the defense to be the way it was last year. And maybe that's and that's why you get a guy like Mensah, and that's why you make upgrades offensively, and why you get guys to return like you did with Mark Fletcher. But I don't know if you can rely on them as much as you did last year. So the offense has really got to be humming. And I just think that there's some worthy questions, in my opinion.
I agree with what you said about how there's a lot that's got to go right on the defense for them to make the run they did this year, or they did last year. I want to run a theory by people in that I think we're kind of overinflating how great this Miami team is. Not denying what they did in the playoff last year. Not denying that at all, but do we remember what the narrative was in the lead up to that of, hey, this is a 10-2 team. The offense hasn't been that impressive. They didn't look great against Florida State. They struggled at times. They lost to SMU and Louisville, for God's sakes, two middling teams. Like, yeah, the run they went on because of that defense was incredible, but the offense scored 7 points, 17, because they got a pick six from Ohio State. 31 against an Ole Miss defense that we all agree was not very good. And then against Indiana, they scored 21. Now, those are some solid defenses, don't get me wrong. But the offense just is not that impressive. And I understand what Kirby, they got better at the quarterback position. Sure. They also had a number one overall pick at the quarterback position 2 years ago, and they did the same thing they've done. Miami, for the last 2-3 years under Cristobal, has really talented, still finds a way to go 10-2 in the regular season. And I don't know if what they lost on the offensive and defensive side this year, that 10-2 turns into 9-3. Now, the schedule's a little bit easier, but the losses that they've always had aren't the ones that you see the preseason go, that's going to be a tough one. So my reason as to why Miami doesn't win the national title this year is because they necessarily weren't at the talent level they could have been to be a national title contender last year. And they've lost a lot of that talent.
I mean, it is crazy to think how close we were to Miami being left out of a playoff and how close we were to this conversation about the Hurricanes not even existing. Like, if Miami didn't make the playoffs last year, I don't know if we're sitting here telling you why they don't win a national title this year. Because
yeah, no, they're not
the conversation around them is completely different. It would have just been, yep, there it is, another season by Mario Cristobal that was a failure. We were so close to that happening, but the playoff like really changed the narrative around that program. And That's not saying it's not worthy of that. Like, obviously, them making it to a national title and being as close as they were to winning a national title, they're worthy of being talked about this way heading into this next season, especially with the additions that they made. But I don't know if they're just like this like golden path to a national title, or like they're just like the clear-cut favorites, or like, you know, I just want to see it. And that's for every team. I'm just not going to sit here and stamp them as like, oh, without a doubt. I mean, they're going to be great defensively. They're going to be great offensively. I'm not stamping that flag yet.
So the reason to answer the question, I don't know if I did properly. The reason why Miami doesn't win the national title this year is because they don't have enough talent on either side of the ball to fill the gaps that they lost last year.
Fair enough. All right, our final team, and we've nearly taken up an entire show doing this segment, but that's a good thing. In the offseason, when you can find a segment like this, and hopefully it's played out as well as we thought it would, if you can take up 40 minutes with a good segment, I think it's certainly worth the time. Our final team, now I kind of went back and forth. There's a couple of teams that you could have thrown in here at the 10 spot. Maybe we can continue to talk about some of those teams that didn't get mentioned here after this one, but I put Ole Miss in this conversation. I think that people are still really high on them. I know everybody's intrigued to see what this team is going to look like for a full season without Lane Kiffin and Charlie Weiss and all those guys, but I would say that Pete Golding did a really good job in the playoffs. Now, you could say what you want about, well, he still had some of Lane's guys. He won't have those guys this year. Alone, like, just looking at them on paper, though, right now, regardless of who the coach is and who the offensive coordinator is and all those things, getting Trinidad Chambliss back for another year is massive. And maintaining Keewon Lacy, massive. Deuce Alexander as well. Like, I would still put them in this conversation of they're really good. I think that they're going to be really talented. But ultimately, I would say why they don't win a national title this year is because you're really hinging on Keewon Lacy and Trinidad Chambliss to be that big of difference makers.
Yeah.
And they're great. They're super talented. I would say that Keewon Lacy, one of the best backs in college football. Trinidad Chambliss, one of the best quarterbacks in college football. But in this era of college football, I don't know if you can walk into a season and just be like, those are our two guys, and they're going to lead us to the promised land. I don't know if I'm buying that.
No, I mean, the days where you can Cam Newton your way to a title are over. So that's out the window. The idea that, you know, Keewon Lacy and Trinidad Chambliss are good enough for 9-3, I'm not subscribing to that theory at all. Now, they have talent. They've done a lot in the portal, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Just ask Dabo Swinney. But there's a lot of room for improvement. The problem is I think that I'm not trusting enough of a Pete Golding-led team that does not have Lane Kiffin or Charlie Weiss Jr. calling the plays. It's fantastic that you got Trinidad Chambliss back. It's fantastic that you got Keewon Lacy back. Frankly, if you didn't get those guys, they're probably not on this list. So that's my thought on that, but I agree with you. I don't think that they have enough firepower offensively to get them to a national title. And it wasn't enough last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue that's the best offense Lane Kiffin roster has ever had.
And I know that chat's in us right now of like, please do your research about Ole Miss. Like, not saying they're not talented. I know I made it seem like that I'm just saying that it's Trinidad and Keewon and a bunch of nobodies. It's not that. Like, I don't expect the offense to just disappear because Lane Kiffin or Charlie Weiss isn't calling the plays anymore. I think they're still going to be really good there. And I could also shift this conversation to the defense has also been quite a letdown for Ole Miss for quite some time, and I don't know if they got immensely better either. I just think that they fail to play complimentary football at times, and it gets them in some situations where walking into every football game every weekend saying, we got to score 38 points or we're going to lose today, I don't know if you can do that for 16 games or however long you have to make it to win a national title. Like, I don't know if that's a winning recipe or a national title winning recipe to go out there and do it every single time, especially when you get down to a team like Miami who plays good enough defense and can hold you at bay for four quarters to where, like, again, like, they're good. I'm just saying I don't know if they're like a balanced football team, and I don't know if they have enough people to complement Trinidad Chambliss and Keewon Lacy.
Yeah, I mean, I think people reference Trinidad and Keewon because of how strong those are, the strengths that are returning this year. Yes, and Terrian Perkins is on the defensive side, and he's a solid edge rusher. I don't think he's a running edge defender that's necessarily going to be an enforcer in that. They added Jonel Aguero from the transfer portal. They added a lot of transfer portal guys, Luke Farrelly, Jay Crawford. The defense has a possibility to be better. I just don't know if the offense is going to stay at the level it was at consistent enough while the defense is going to, like, even if Ole Miss's defense is better next year, they're a decent defense. They're an okay defense. I don't think you can win with an okay defense and a really good offense. I think it requires greatness somewhere.
Yeah, and again, guys, like, I know that you're going to feel passionate about your teams, but the whole point of this segment is saying why we don't think you win a national title. And you're in this conversation for a reason. It's because you have national title aspirations, and we can envision you winning a national title this year. But we're just, hey, poking the hole, saying, hey, maybe what's the reason why they don't? Just throwing some caution in the wind a little bit. Now, some teams that we didn't talk about, like, you could make the argument, hey, where's Texas A&M in this conversation? They bring back Marcel Reed. All those good things, like, they belong in this conversation. But I would say that, you know, defensively, I think there's some concerns there. I think you had quite a bit. You're going to have some drop off there, losing a guy like Torian York, the edge rusher, Cassius Howell. those guys. I think that there's some concern there to believe maybe the defense isn't going to be as good as it was last year, but they get a lot of fresh faces over there. I know there's a lot of buzz in spring camp for them right now of some freshmen that are making some waves, and if Marcel Reed can continue to get better, then they'll be a dangerous team again. But hey, changing offensive coordinators because Colin Klein is no longer with the team. We'll see how that goes. So I think there's multiple questions you can make about Texas A&M.
For sure. I mean, there's a handful of fringe teams that are kind of on the outside potential playoff teams. I don't know, though. So there's a lot of teams we could have done this for. I think we kept it at a tight 10 is good.
For sure. All right, moving on from why your team won't win a national title. Now let's talk about a team that didn't make this list, but they did play some football this weekend, Christian. The Clemson Tigers took the field, had their spring game. We know that they have officially announced their starting quarterback in Chris Vezina. And if you haven't checked out our film study on that, we released it this past weekend. You should go and do that. Me and Brooks got in here on Friday, cranked that out. And I will say, from someone that has watched the film and didn't know a whole lot about Chris Vezina going into this year, and certainly didn't know anything about him last year. After watching the film, I am a little bit more optimistic about Clemson's offense going into this year. Like, I think he's good enough. I think he's a good enough college quarterback for them to be successful on offense. Now, it does get a little funky at times. He's got this big, long frame, and there's multiple throws in the film if you go and watch it where, I mean, Christian, the nose of the ball is just straight down sometimes in the ball flight, and it is just darting into the dirt, and it creates some accuracy issues. But outside of that, I think that he's good enough. He's a good enough competitor. He's athletic enough. I think he's smart enough to play the position. I think Chris Vezina is good enough, and they actually return more on offense than I thought they did. But it's going to be like kind of how the theme of our why you don't win a national title, the same question remains of, can you protect the guy? Is the offensive line going to be good enough? Like TJ Moore and Bryant Wesco, really good football players. I think, again, you're going to be good in the weapon department, but there's just some underlying issues. But they did play a football game, and I would say that it was an okay day for Chris. Now, again, we don't have the privilege of watching this. We can only go back and look at the stat sheets. I know that there's highlights posted and whatnot, but I think that we are seeing this transition of Clemson, like, just not believing it. Just kind of like, you're over to the side now. You're not the main topic in college football.
Yeah, I got
to
be honest. When I saw this topic, I was kind of just looking at it like, I don't know how much we can break down from Christopher Vezina's, what is it, Clemson spring scrimmage.
I think he had 18 attempts.
Yeah, so.
And really, the reason I wanted to throw this in the show notes is to remind you guys to go and watch the Chris Vezina tape. Now, that's from a start last year for him. And you'll see some throws, and you'll see some things of like, oh, yep, there's Clemson football. Like, I kid you not, Christian. There's a sequence in the film where we work our way down the offensive line. I mean, play by play, where it's left tackle gets beat immediately, left guard gets beat immediately, the center gets beat immediately, right guard, right tackle, all five of them just get blown past, and it completely blows up the play. It's like, yep, there's Clemson football. We're throwing a fake screen on the first play of the game. Don't know why we're doing that, but hey, that's Garrett Riley. We got Chad Morris in the mix now. Maybe we'll see some changes there. One thing that me and Brooks did talk about, and I'll ask for your opinion on this, Christian, of a staple in the Clemson offense, no matter what, no matter who is at quarterback, has been they're involved in the run game.
Yeah.
They run those guys. Trevor Lawrence, Deshaun Watson, Cade Klubnik, like all of those guys. Yeah, all of those guys have been involved in the run game consistently. And is that going to continue to be a thing? And I think a reason why is because, you know, the run game hasn't been reliable in years prior to where, hey, we have to get the quarterback involved. We've got to make him respect something. I don't. Vezina is not one of these kids I want running 8 times a game, 9 times a game. Like, I think he's good enough, but certainly not somebody I just want tasking him with, like, hey, you got 8 carries today.
I mean, Cade Klubnik's not a guy you want running 9 times a game.
Right.
Trevor Lawrence wasn't. Trevor Lawrence got knocked out of the game because of concussion on a run. If there's one thing we know about Dabo Swinney, it's that if he believes in something, he does it, no matter how detrimental it might be to his roster. Christopher Vezina is going to be involved in the run game this year, whether or not that is to the detriment of his health or if that's something that's going to hurt their offense. Dabo Swinney and the offensive system is, hey, we use our quarterback's legs when we feel it's appropriate. We don't care who it is at that position. you're going to run. So I think Christopher Vezina will be a rushing component.
And I will say, based on what I saw from the spring breakdowns from all of the Clemson outlets, it seemed like Gideon Davidson did have a good day at running back, said that guy's a clear front runner, looks really solid for them. I think he had something like 86 rushing yards for them in the spring game. So maybe he is someone that actually provides some consistency in the run game. But if you don't get anything figured out on the offensive line, it ultimately won't matter, and neither will your quarterback play. But just wanted to talk on that, remind you guys to go watch the Chris Vezina tape. It's really good, really interesting in my opinion. I enjoyed being in the room while Brooks did that. So some fun offseason content for you.
Now, I want to read you these Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah, I was going to say, I want to get to these Sarkisian quotes.
So I know we're skipping a couple of things, but this is just peak offseason. So Steve Sarkisian did an interview with On3 recently and was kind of asked about, hey, how's the team looking and all these things. And offered these quotes because obviously the last season did not go how anyone planned it to in Austin. They were 9-3. They missed college football playoff. It was rather disappointing to the point where now they've made a lot of acquisitions in the transfer portal and in the recruiting world. So Sark was talking about it. He goes, I was like, he said, quote, I was like, this feels like it used to feel like, and we didn't always have that. We've always had some years where it's been on one side of the ball and some years it's been on the other side of the ball. This is different. And the article goes on to talk about how last year was different and all those things. And this is the quote that I want to kind of give out to the people and highlight. Quote, it's the engagement and the competitive spirit on both sides that jumps out. I'll never forget in those years at Alabama with Jerry Jeudy, Jalen Waddle, and Smitty. Those guys could be assholes in the way that they went at defensive guys, but they respected Pat Surtain. They respected Xavier McKinney. There was a lot of that. And at the end of the day, they walked off the field together. That's what it feels like here. Now, I have a personal rule about just anything related when you're a college football coach. Never set expectations that high. Never hype your team up. Never compare it to national championship winning teams that some revere as one of the greatest teams we've seen the past few decades. Don't do that. Keep expectations low, keep your head forward, and just drive for it. Because when you have these high expectations, all that is room for you to do is look like a disappointment and an idiot if you ultimately don't meet him, which there's a 90% chance you don't, because how many teams are going to be as good as 2020 Alabama or 2019 LSU or any other fantastic team? Now, this might be an exception for me because of what everything that has gone into Texas this offseason, all of the spending and all of the acquisitions and how everyone's basically saying, hey, they better win it all or it's a disappointment. I'm giving Sark a pass here because, yeah, at this point, you're so hyped up anyways. What's the harm in you, the head coach, going, yeah, it reminds me of when Alabama had four first-round picks at the wide receiver position and went 10-0, won the national title. And, like, the last great Nick Saban team. Yeah, this reminds me of that.
I'm trying to think of a time where I can remember a coach coming out and giving quotes like this ever really panned out, ever really ended up working out in their favor. Like, I remember Dabo Sweeney last year saying, like, this is the highest player score that we have ever had. This is going into last season. As season was a failure, Shane Beamer has done this at times with South Carolina. Now, one time it went to a 9-3 record, almost made the college football playoffs, but and then kind of repeated the same trend going into this past year, won one conference game. I'm not saying it's going to be that bad for Texas. I don't think it would ever be that bad for Texas. I just can't ever remember a time where a coach comes out here in the offseason and gives quotes like this where it's to the tune of, oh, this is just different. This year is the year. We could feel it. Practice is different. The players are different. Like, it's like when Billy Napier's like, DJ's got that look in his eye now. Like, I feel like these quotes, and the reason why I say this and the ultimate conclusion I came to is it's because the really good coaches don't do it.
And I'm not here to say Sark isn't a really good head coach. I think it's just irresponsible to put those expectations on you and those soundbites. And I don't have a problem with him coming out and saying, yeah, this team feels more connected. Yeah, we've got guys going at each other more than they have. Don't draw it back to and tie it back to teams of that prestige. And I understand that Steve Sarkisian was a part of a fantastic college football team in 2020 and a fantastic offense. I mean, for God's sakes, he had Mac Jones as a Heisman finalist. He made a wide receiver the Heisman Trophy winner. That 2020 offense was almost pretty basically unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not here to say that Steve Sarkisian isn't a good coach. I'm just here to say, when you set your expectations this high and you ultimately don't meet them, you look dumb.
Oh, for sure. And, like, continuing with Steve Sarkisian's theme, there's even more credit to where he's coming from because We do think that Steve Sarkisian is going to be able to focus on just the offensive side of the ball. He doesn't have to be going back and forth between offense and defense, something that he alluded to at the end of last year. It's why you go and get a guy like Will Muschamp and why you pay him the dollars that you are right now to be the defensive coordinator over there. So I think it does alleviate some of the roles that he had last year compared to this year, to where, hey, maybe because he can focus on the offense as much as he wants to this year, maybe he does get it running like the way he had it at Alabama, where his only role is you call plays, you make sure the offense is doing its job. Maybe it does look like that. But I would also say, of when I think about a coach saying this, and I don't want to turn it into like, and I'm not saying every coach has to be these guys, but Kirby Smart has never came out here and said, oh man, when I look at these guys at practice, I just like, I'm taken back to when we were, how we were in 2021 with this defense, or how we were in 2022, how balanced we were. And like Ryan Day, I don't think he's ever done this. And Kurt Cignetti, I can never envision him doing something like this. Like, I don't know. It just feels weird.
Yeah. And he even does it more in the quote. Like, there's another quote where he says, I would say probably for the first time, we feel like we have top level talent across the board, position by position on both sides of the ball. But yet we also have the depth behind it to across the board. I feel like we've had years where we've been elite at up a couple of positions, and maybe we hadn't had enough behind. Like, basically just hyping up, like, this is the most complete team I've ever had. It reminds me of when Alabama, like, don't do that, dude. Because if you win the Natty, great. The expectations you to win the Natty if you do this or not. But now if you do go 9-3, or you go 10-2, or you stumble in the college football playoff, people will have this quote on paper in writing to say, hey, remember when Steve Sarkisian tried telling everyone that they're the deeper than they've ever been across the board, and they're more competitive, and it's 2020 Alabama all over again? Just keep expectations at a low as a college football coach.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's not going to do any harm to Steve Sarkisian, whether he gave this quote or not. How this season goes for the Longhorns, of if they play for a national title or not, the decision is made, in my opinion, of like what people think about Steve Sarkisian, what they think about Texas. Like, again, we've reiterated this so many times, but it's the truth of this is the chips are all in season. Mm-hmm. So it is the year for you to go out there and say that, because no matter what happens, the case was going to be the case. Whether or not you came out here and said that, you get flashbacks to how you were at Alabama when you had all those elite wide receivers. It didn't matter. Like, the expectations were going to be the expectations, but doubling down on it does seem a little goofy in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's why I've kind of given the exception for him, because it's like everyone tells you have to win a Natty this year anyways. Like, you coming out and saying it as well. Like, Shane Beamer, don't be coming in front of a mic being like, we're going to compete for a playoff this year. Like, don't do that. But Steve Sarkisian at this point, what the hell? It doesn't matter.
I do want to touch on this story, and this is just a me thing probably. In fact, I haven't even seen anybody give this take on the Jeremiah Smith quote. And I don't have the direct quote right in front of me, but Jeremiah Smith was interviewed at spring practice, and he talked about how teams were throwing all these massive offers at him, and he's like, and one team in particular, I'm not going to name them, but you guys know who they are. They were throwing a bag at me to try and get them to transfer out. And everybody's talking about how, oh, you know, Miami's taking and running with it. They're making jokes about it, how we don't need Jeremiah Smith. We're better off without you. You don't even have to throw our name in there. All those things. But I find this so funny to me, because what player isn't getting thrown a bag at in the offseason? Who isn't getting thrown an offer right now? Like, legitimately. Even if you don't even have to be as good as Jeremiah Smith. You don't even have to be a former five-star. If you are a starting player on a Power 4 roster, please tell me somebody, an example of this where you have not been offered a deal to go elsewhere. Name me a single one. Yeah. Because I think that the consensus now is everybody's getting offered new money. Everybody's getting offered to go somewhere else.
Yeah, I don't know, and I get it's the offseason. We're looking for stories here. I don't know why this became like such a, can you believe Jeremiah Smith? And he didn't even name the school. Like, a school called Jeremiah Smith and offered him a transfer? Oh, you mean the most talented wide receiver possibly that this generation of football has seen? People are comping to Julio Jones is getting offers to transfer schools?
Yeah.
That's not news. That's an expectation. That's an understanding.
I mean, there are guys on rosters that have never even played a snap that are getting offered deals to go somewhere else. So this isn't me trashing Jeremiah Smith or throwing shade at him for making this comment. It is what it is. We understand, like, hey, schools threw big money at you. But again, like, I find it funny because who is it? Who is it, like, getting offered a new deal?
Like, no offense. Like, if Nicar came in front of a mic and was like, you should have seen the multi-million dollar deals that I had coming in. Like, that would be like, okay, this is interesting. It's Jeremiah Smith. It's the best wide receiver in college football, hands down. Why is this news?
Yeah. So, again, just given the era of college football, the time that we're in, I mean, we hear crazy stories all the time. Jeremiah Smith getting offered millions of dollars to transfer. Certainly not one of the crazy stories. And if you're Miami fans and you're clowning on Jeremiah for saying this and laughing at him, I would have been mad if your school didn't try. I would have been mad at Miami if we didn't make an offer to Jeremiah Smith this offseason. Like, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't we offer a kid that's from our state? And hey, maybe this season isn't looking the way that you thought it would at Ohio State. Maybe you guys aren't going to be as good as you were last year. But hey, look at us. We got a brand new quarterback. We're looking like we're riding all this momentum for making a national title game. Like, I would have been super mad as a Miami fan if I found out the Hurricanes didn't offer Jeremiah Smith millions of dollars.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Should we go to the local hour, Kirby? I see the jokes. Local 45, not tonight. We're getting a full hour, even a little bit on top. We'll see you on the other side.